So I have a lot of dear friends who are mothers to newborns right now. I actually celebrated 5 new babies born to close friends of mine in this year alone. So I've been thinking a lot lately about the fraught history of how we feed babies. So excuse me while I recount a little tiny slice of the history of American breastfeeding here, while acknowledging that this is a history many of you have lived through in very intimate ways. In the 1960s and 70s, most American babies were not breastfed. As little as 22% of American infants born in 1972 were breastfed. And this all had to do with the advent of good baby formula. But then really solid scientific evidence about the benefits of breastfeeding and breast milk emerged, and started this whole movement to counteract the decline in breastfeeding rates. In 1991, actually the year I was born, the World Health Organization and UNICEF launched a highly successful worldwide campaign to educate new mothers about the benefits of breastfeeding. And one of the most famous slogans to emerge from that campaign was, breast is best. And it worked. Now the vast majority of American infants, 83% of babies born in 2019 in the US, start breastfeeding from birth. And one of the narratives that came out of this movement, helped along by well-meaning organizations like La Leche League, was this whole image of breastfeeding Madonna and child as the most natural thing in the whole world. And this notion that all mothers can naturally produce enough good milk for their baby if they just learn to do it correctly. Now that is some mother's experience, but it wasn't mine. Because of all this emphasis and education, I was surprised to find breastfeeding to be really difficult. Incredibly frustrating and pretty painful. I felt like I tried everything and I still failed at it. My attempts to exclusively breastfeed my first child stretched me and him to our limits. When I finally switched to pumping at 4 months and then formula at 6, the resulting feeling of failure, not feeling like not enough for my baby, it tore me apart. Wasn't being a good mother all about doing what was best for my child, no matter the pain, no matter the cost? Now, supporting so many of my friends through similar experiences, I know I wasn't alone. I know that many, many mothers choose to feed their babies with pumped breast milk or formula for a whole host of very good reasons. And I also know that many of those same mothers also feel overwhelmed by a cascade of judgment and shame, whether real or imagined, internal or external, that surrounds the decision to turn to other ways of nourishing your baby. So there's this new movement now called Fed is Best. It's all about supporting mothers so that above all, babies are simply well fed, whether by bottle or breast or with formula. It's also about educating people that what's best for babies are mentally healthy mothers, well slept, well supported moms. The voices around me, like my own mother, my husband, that reminded me that I am my best mother when I take care of myself, were so, so vital. I needed them because our society's glorification of self-sacrifice, especially from mothers, is so, so loud. We honor mothers for putting their own needs last. We expect parents to do everything and anything for their children, no matter the cost. But we can go too far in our rhetoric. And as Christians, we need to acknowledge how the church's glorification of self-sacrifice undergirds it all. We're here, gathered around this table today because Jesus feeds us with his own body. And you know, tomorrow, July 29th, marks the 50th anniversary of the so-called Philadelphia 11, the brave American women who defied the church to be ordained as priests in the Episcopal Church. And one of the arguments against ordaining women that's still lobbied against us today is the assertion that women can't stand in persona Christi, can't properly represent Jesus at the altar. There are so many holes in that argument I can't even begin to address here, but I want to point this out. In a profound way, a nursing mother can embody Jesus even better than the rest of us can. In fact, connections between nursing mothers, Jesus, and God go way, way back, as far as the Bible, but also Christian writings like Anselm of Canterbury's Canticle from the 11th century, a song of Christ's goodness that explicitly depicts Jesus as a nursing mother who feeds us with her milk. This is my body given for you. But we're really much more used to connecting the imagery of the Eucharist with the accounts of the Last Supper from the Gospels of Mark and Matthew and Luke, and therefore with Jesus's death. All our Eucharist prayers contain the words of institution that go something along the lines of, on the night before he died for us, Jesus took bread. Recounting it that way, the bread becomes Jesus's broken body, a symbol of Jesus's self-sacrifice on the cross. We remember and we revere how Jesus gave everything for us. We love and honor him for it. What's super interesting about the Gospel of John, though, is that the fourth Gospel's retelling of the Last Meal doesn't have the words of institution. There's no moment where Jesus breaks the bread and says, this is my body, or lifts the cup and says, this is my blood. Not in this Gospel. Instead, we get stories of Jesus teaching his followers throughout his ministry, I am the bread of life. This is the Eucharist moment in the Gospel of John. Jesus taking the five small loaves of barley, giving thanks, breaking them, sharing them with 5,000 people. Jesus being bread for all then is not about death, but about life. I am the bread of life. This moment reminds us that Jesus doesn't just save us through his death. He saves us through his birth and life. And ministry too. Jesus can give us all that we need and still walk around and keep healing and loving and teaching. Everyone ate until they were satisfied, and there was still plenty left over. 12 baskets full. Which makes us look back on the self-sacrifice moment on the cross in a new way too. Part of the point is that Jesus, that God, would do anything for us. Give anything for us, including his only son, his very life. But the whole other part of the point is that death is not death for him. Death cannot hold Jesus. He comes back to show us he is alive, scarred but not wounded, whole and well. There is plenty of Jesus left over. You know, there's good reasons to celebrate the martyrs who died for the continuation and survival of the Christian faith and the institutional church. But I also wonder if we should balance out the stories of the heroes who gave everything with the behind-the-scenes heroes of the church who know how to give without exhausting themselves. The ones who know how and when to say yes, but also how and when to say no. When to step up and when to step back. When to serve the beautiful, well-planned, homemade, three-course church potluck, and when to open up the bag of chips and the package of store-bought cookies, because what matters most is that no one is alone, and no one is hungry, and no one has worked themselves to the point of exhaustion. Church should not feel like a place where you give and you give until nothing is left over. We are our best church and our best Jesus followers when we aren't stretched to our limits and exhausting ourselves to breaking point. What would it look like to draw our vision of church from this moment here on the hillside when one boy's lunch becomes everyone well fed? When sharing what you brought when giving what God gave you feeds you too. Fed is best means that the one you serve is well fed, but you're well fed too. This week, I formally announced to the parish that I'll be leaving you soon in September to take a part-time rectorship in the Eastern Diocese. And as I discerned what my next steps would be, I grounded myself in the conviction that God has called me to three equally sacred covenantal vocations: priesthood, motherhood, and marriage. Because all three come from the same God, I knew there must be a way to balance all three so that no one vocation is sacrificed for any other, but also that I myself am not sacrificed either. My vision for St. Mark's own discernment in the weeks to come is that you are guided by this vision of spiritual nourishment too, that you remember fed is best. When we put incredibly high expectations on ourselves about what church should be, full pews, tons of kids programs, stellar music, fantastic sermons, impactful ministries, when we assume it should all come naturally if we just figure out how to do it correctly, we can stretch ourselves to the limit, tear ourselves up in the process. We can forget the most important thing is that everyone that arrives to this table receives a bit of bread, a whole lot of Jesus, and the good news they need to keep on keeping on. God is the bush that burns but is not consumed. God is the crucified that does not stay dead. Jesus gave his life, but there was more left over. He came back to say, "I am here, still alive with you. My way is the way of life and rest and abundance." Today and every Sunday, may we all be well fed. Amen.